This is Mae Brussel. This is tape number 859, May the 23rd, 1988. As we get closer to the November elections, you might have noticed that I have spent no time at all on the presidential candidates. I'm not interested in any of them who are running, even when it narrows down to two. And the way I vote is usually, it has always been for the Democratic Party, because the Democrats would pick better justices for the Supreme Court than the Republicans. And outside of that, I can see very little difference. We had our coup d'etat November 22nd, 1963, and the players in that scene are visible almost every single day in the news, and I forget how often they are visible until the next morning when I wake up and see another item. An example of that is the story that I had with you last week on the tape about Financial News Network, and how Earl Bryan, Dr. Earl Bryan, the long friend of Edwin Meese, and Ronald Reagan made a killing off of the stock market crash and had a reference to, in quotes, "It's a story FNN was born to cover. This is our version of the Kennedy assassination." And I shared with you a translation of what that means. And that reminded me that this is the anniversary of the birthday of John Kennedy. So I'm going to do this entire program on news items and articles and information that I have on the Kennedy assassination, because that really was the basis of where my research started. And the more I go back to that earlier work and the current news that relates to the murder, I realize this is where I should be spending my time and get started writing some books on the matter. Now, when you have a coup d'etat, the power control group takes over in every way that they can. And there were three articles this week, several this week, and one that I had in my files that I want to share with you about that power control group. May the 12th, 1988, Lou Cannon had a story in the Washington Post titled, "Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, Join a Group to Help the Next President, Whoever He Is, Avoid Some Pitfalls." In parentheses, I added "whoever he is." The Washington Post story is "Carter Ford joined group to help next president avoid pitfalls, some pitfalls." And the organization they formed is called the American Agenda. Now, Jimmy Carter was put in for one term by the Trilateral Commission. And Gerald Ford, you remember, was never elected president of anything. He was appointed by a crook. And then he couldn't win his own election. And he came right off the Warren Commission that Richard Nixon had put him on as a representative of the CIA to cover up the assassination. And that one-term trilateral member, Jimmy Carter, handpicked by Zbigniew Brzezinski and David Rockefeller, was the interim until they could get Ronald Reagan as president, which I predicted many, many years ago. So, and also Jimmy Carter, of course, is linked to Ryosha Sasakawa. He took $17 million from him for his library. So that, plus the 912 dead at Jonestown, gives you a little bit of view of the Democratic president, former president, and then Gerald Ford. Now, they are starting what they call an unusual bipartisan group to assist the new president. And the coup really brought together what was the Democratic Party, Lyndon Johnson, who assisted in the cover-up of the murder of a democratically elected president, and with Gerald Ford helping him and Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy on the Warren Commission. And then bipartisan shtick came together as soon as Kennedy was murdered, with the Democrats and Republicans having the same mind and how they would cover up this crime and literally control the world. Now, the article said that these great ex-presidents, Carter and Ford, and keep in mind just who they were and what they did, they are going to decide the five or six most serious issues likely to be faced by the next president, and when he's elected in November, they will put him in his hand and say, "This is what you're supposed to direct yourself to." It won't be about Satanism and human sacrifice and cannibalism and chopping off babies' heads in front of children. These are the six issues that you are to address yourself to. And on the board, or the group handpicked for American Agenda, will be number one, Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State; Brent Scowcroft, National Security Advisor after Kissinger was out, and now the chief main chairman of Kissinger Associates. And didn't Henry Gonzalez say in 1983 that the State Department was leased to Kissinger Associates? Also on the board will be Donald Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense; Michael Blumenthal, former Treasury Secretary, Edmund Muskie, formerly of the Tower Report that covered up the necessity to throw away the National Security Council entirely, Vernon Jordan, who was shot by Mr. Franklin, Joseph Franklin, who he's protected him and never spoke out about this mass murderer who's sitting in jail now, the same man who shot and paralyzed Larry Flynt, Robert Strauss of the Democratic Party, a man who's called in all the time to advise Nancy Reagan, Director Stuart Eisenstadt, former U.S. attorney, he's in Washington, D.C., an attorney and advisor Jimmy Carter, and the American Agenda already has started off the ground with a $500,000 grant from the Times Mirror Corporation. Of course, that Times Mirror is basically owned and was formed by the Chandler family, and they have Mr. Robert Murphy on the board. He's formerly of the CIA. So Los Angeles Times puts up $500,000 for Kissinger and Scowcroft to tell whoever is elected what the issues are that they will handle when they get in. Now, they said they will consult 75 specialists on the problem. Of course, these specialists will come from the National Security Council, from the National Security Agency, the Pentagon, the CIA, and the likes of Fritz Kramer. And the decisions of the most important policies will be handed to whoever wins, probably with a proclamation, follow these or your head will be blown off. So that's as much as I have to say about American Agenda, LA Times putting the money in, and of course Kissinger and Scowcroft being the kingpins of this whole operation. And of course, look at their past with Gerry Ford being the main news leaker and liar on the murder of John Kennedy and the covering up, and Jimmy Carter. Another article on the Power Control Group, April the 12th, 1988, last month from the Washington Times. Powerful players get a global bank off the ground. And all this is happening while people are listening to Jesse Jackson saying we have to get more jobs, or Dukakis talking and making fun of the astrologer advising Nancy Reagan. That was the joke he got in California, speaking in Sacramento. All those petty little trivial things they're talking about. This is the second article about a power control group this past in the past couple weeks. Organizers will soon be announcing the final details for the long-delayed opening of the Credit International Bank, ambitious international finance bank. Plans are being prepared. It will be called Credit International. We have the American Agenda. Now, this is the money team, the Credit International, private banking service, and U.S. real estate financing for foreign investors to come and buy up our country, in addition to trade financing operations. Last September, they opened up with an initial capitalization of $45 million, by far the largest sum ever sought for a new bank in Washington, D.C. The head of the bank is going to be Mr. Richard Allen, former National Security Advisor, former partner with William Casey and Robert Vesco. The article from the Washington Times said this will be the largest initial capitalization fund ever for a Washington bank. Just last month, they raised $15 million to capitalize it. Credit International and its holding company, Credit International Bank, BANC Shares Limited, will have a director, and it will be headed by Chairman Richard V. Allen, which is nothing but a CIA bank that would replace probably Willard Zucker, a co-partner of theirs through the Iran-Contra affairs and going back to the Vesco days and the secret money in Swiss accounts. They have to shift gears sometimes going into a different operation. So chairman now is Richard V. Allen, who now heads his own international consulting firm. He travels to the Far East, and other board members include Dr. Edwin Fulner, president and chief executive of Heritage Foundation. They set up the platform for Ronald Reagan, a Washington-based think tank. Tom C. Karologos, president of Timmons & Company, Washington government relations firm. Donald Hoved, H-O-V-D-E, chairman of J.E. Robert Company. And Charles Manat, a Washington lawyer, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee. They have Mr. Strauss on the American Agenda, Charles Manat of the Democratic Party with the Credit International Bank, and spelled two ways, so they have one overseas, probably the Netherlands Antilles, or the one of the Swiss banks, or Luxembourg. They can put their other bank spelled with a C overseas, and it's very chic. Credit International will focus on private banking services, international trade financing, and they will have loan offices in Hong Kong and London. And a third focus of the bank will be to identify real estate financing opportunities and loan opportunities between 20 and 100 million. So they will be telling people fleeing from Hong Kong, because China is going to take it over within a few years, how to buy up America with their cash that's floating around. And the leaders of the Democratic Party are working with Richard Allen and the Heritage Foundation. And again, that's why I don't take the parties themselves seriously at all. Last week I shared with you just a little tidbit about Martin Anderson's new book on the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board and how Ronald Reagan and Henry Kissinger literally whittled it down so it would be more manageable, and the opponents of such things as sending arms to Iran are diverting money to the Contras. It wouldn't have probably passed if there were the full board. There is an article, printed a while back, and I've referred to it other times, about when Reagan came into power and reactivated the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, with a P in front of it, the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. This was from the Morning News in Dallas, October 21st, 1981. And the article says, President Reagan reversed action taken 4 years ago by Jimmy Carter. He reestablished his Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, and he added five Texans among its 19 members, among them Ann Armstrong. And she's the liaison to the committee that makes policy decisions for 20 years. She's on the board with Henry Kissinger, Fred Ickley, and Zbigniew Brzezinski. That's their long-range 20-year plan. The American agenda, of course, is what the next elected president will get in his hand, given by these experts in November. And, of course, the investments will come out of Richard Allen's firms. And this article in 1981 told who the members of Texas were that Reagan put on the board. One was Ross Perot. It was very useful to the Reagan administration in trying to get the hostages and other surreptitious activities. The other was John Connally. Now, in 1981, Reagan was gung-ho about John Connally, but all of a sudden, Connally took a powder, disappeared out of Washington, went bankrupt in Texas. But in 1981, he had big political ambitions. The other one was Leon Jaworski, formerly from the Nuremberg trial, from the Kennedy assassination, the Warren Report, from covering up the Korea Gate story, the Watergate story. Leon Jaworski was appointed by Ronald Reagan then to be on the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. And another person appointed by Reagan was Edward Bennett Williams. Now, Edward Bennett Williams had already been identified as the law office representing John Hinckley, also Robert Vesco and Richard Helms and Jimmy Hoffa. But he was on the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, and along with them in 1981 was placed Admiral Thomas Moore, also on the board of Western Goals, you remember, and still is probably. And that institution was putting a $100,000 computer, had it attached to the LAPD, and probably has it in 50 states or 150 states, but this one was identifiable. And there are other members of that board, Claire Luce, a very active person in the Vatican, the Knights of Malta, whose husband owned Time Life, and Jerry Ford. And Leon Jaworski used Life magazine eloquently to display the lie that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin of John Kennedy. And another member on that board was Alfred Bloomingdale, who shortly afterwards was dying of cancer, and his mistress was exposing his sadomasochism. And while she was living with him, she was living with Bernie Cornfield, a partner of Mr. Zucker, and working with investment overseas, and with Robert Vesco and Richard Allen. So this Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board was stacked with people who had direct fingers into the assassination of John Kennedy and the cover-up. John Connally, of course, was in the car with Jack Kennedy. He was the governor of Texas that completely covered up the murder. He survived the attack. He may not have even known where it was going to take place, but he sure knew how to cover it up afterwards, starting with the destruction of the clothing that he had that would tell where the entry and exit fibers were, that would illustrate that Oswald didn't shoot them from the back, that the bullet holes went through the front of the clothing. And one more article on the Power Control Group this past week, May the 11th, 1988, investigative team set up by law firm. Now, the law firm to test and investigate corporations that may have their fingers into hanky-panky major crimes is the Washington office of the New York law firm of Milbank, Bank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy. That's John J. McCloy of the Warren Commission, John J. McCloy, who designed the Pentagon, who released the top Nazis, who was High Commissioner of Germany, that worked closely with Reinhard Gehlen, von Gehlen. His name really was von Gehlen. And these people are sending up a investigative group, a private investigative group, to work with executives and directors of possible illegal acts done by their employees. Now, this is going to be a first of its kind, just like that first of its kind bank that Richard Allen's going to be part of, the first of its kind in the Washington area, headed by three Milbank Tweed's well-known partners. And incidentally, John J. McCloy is still alive. People wonder if he's alive. He's very much alive. Partners of this law office, we are going to use former Attorney General Elliot Richardson. Richardson, of course, was the attorney for Cyrus Hashemi and has been covering up a large part of the investment of Hashemi into Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch funding an operation for weapons, and Richardson was part of that. William E. Jackson and Thomas Puccio, former government prosecutor in the Abscam case. A number of U.S. companies have turned to special examination teams to investigate major internal legal problems, and in part, special investigating teams often enjoy more credibility. So the High Commissioner, these high lawyers going right from the Warren Commission, John J. McCloy, and of course, these names that were involved in the cover-up of the murder of John Kennedy, as I say, weave through our news all the time, and I think it's important to update those for you and just illustrate where those people are now as against what they were doing 25 years ago. The Washington Times article says the model for the service that they're forming, cited by Elliot Richardson, was the investigation and subsequent report prepared for the investment banking firm of E.F. Hutton in 1985 by former Carter administration attorney General Griffin Bell, following federal allegations that employees in a number of Hutton offices were conducting a multi-million dollar check kiting scheme. Now, E.F. Hutton was not only involved in a check kiting scheme, and they paid a $1 million penalty in Rhode Island last week for their investment of mafia drug money, but this same Mr. Thomas Puccio, who is now affiliated with John J. McCloy and this outfit, Milbank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy, very carefully skirted the responsibility of Merrill Lynch and E.F. Hutton in putting the heroin money from New York City into Swiss banks, and some of it even going to Mr. Paul Waradal, who paid Mr. Salente Bey Ali Aja to shoot the Pope. So they call that a very successful investigation when it skirted the real issues. And then the article said Milbank partner John J. McCloy helped conduct a special internal investigation of Gulf Oil Corporation following charges of irregularities in the oil business. So what we have here are examples that have been in the newspaper just recently. And then to refresh your memory, in case you didn't remember, the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board with people like John Connolly and Leon Jaworski, et cetera, that these special law firms are being set up in Washington to go into the hanky-panky of the major corporations who never get prosecuted, and banks are being set up by Richard Allen, whereby our country can be sold to foreign investors, and he's working with the Democratic Party, the Republican, the Heritage Foundation, etc., and then this special agenda where the new president, whoever he is, gets a package put in his hand and says, well, this is what you are to deal with. These are the six issues you will deal with. And then the blinders are put on so he can't look the other way, and he says, well, I'm busy with this agenda. Now, there's some of you that live on the West Coast in San Francisco area that get this tape. I want to tell you, in case you didn't see it in the Chronicle, that the play Kennedy's Children opened up there. It got good reviews in the Chronicle, and it is playing at a theater called Lyrica, L-Y-R-I-K-A Productions, at the Climate, C-L-I-M-A-T-E Theater, 252 9th Street, and it will be playing through next Friday, through Saturday, May 28th. And so I recommend it. A lot of you will get this tape and maybe have a chance a day or two to make plans to go see it. Kennedy's Children is a brilliant play written by Robert Patrick in 1975, examining four kinds of people that were affected by the Kennedy assassination and what it did to them. And there are four people who literally give monologues but interweave without, they don't relate to each other but tell you their own particular tragedy. And there's Wanda, the black lady who misses Kennedy so much and talks about the civil rights advances that were going to take place. And Carla, who's the prototype of Marilyn Monroe at the period, and what the period was meaning and doing to her. Then there was Sparger, an actor and a civil rights activist who's burned out by the hypocrisy and greed of what happened from the 60s of Kennedy until 75 when this play was written. And then there's the Vietnam veteran, Mark, who is disillusioned, who lost his innocence, went into drugs, and talks about the murders he did. Maybe if you've never read this play, you might send for it or go to a bookstore and see if you can buy it. Those of you in the Bay Area can get it. Now, as I say, I'm going to take things that I've had in my files and things that are in the news and share them with you, and some very shocking things about the Kennedy assassination and new material that I had here and didn't even realize I passed over it, didn't see what I was seeing at the time, see it better now. It's been 23, 24 years since I read certain things I'm going to share with you today that are so important. And it excites me when I get out the Warren Commission hearings. A lot of people may wonder, how could she spend 9 years reading 26 volumes of exhibits and testimony? But truthfully, there wasn't one single time period that was boring for me. And even when I was doing it, I have to say that when I started, I was married, raising 5 children. The youngest was 2 years old. I had never read a mystery book, no background investigative work. I missed so many clues in the 26 volumes that now I'm ready to go back again and read all of them. Forget the Iran-Contra, go back to where the problem started, and I want to share some of that with you right now. There was one article written in Review of the News. That's a publication put out by John Reese, an article by Frank Capel, and this is what was in this Review of the News. The authors of the 1971 German Accords, which approved the concept of two Germanies, accepted the Berlin Wall at the time, and arranged the admission of the Reds, the Red-occupied Germany, East Germany, to the United Nations. The people that did this, among others, were Helmut Sonnenfeld, and Sonnenfeld is a active member now in Kissinger Associates. James Sutherland was another person that went along with this, and Henry Kissinger. And Sutherland was selected by Henry Kissinger to be the boss of the U.S., the entire United States Foreign Service. Then there is the case of Boris H. Klossen, K-L-O-S-S-O-N, another possible security risk, who was appointed on Henry Kissinger's recommendation to become a top-ranking political intelligence officer at the U.S. negotiating team assigned to strategic arms limitation talks. Those were the SALT talks in those early days, and with Ronald Reagan going to meet in the Soviet Union, all the discussion of weapons. This goes back to the SALT talks earlier in a time period of 1971 when Henry Kissinger appointed as his top person at the SALT talks for him, Boris Klossen. Boris Klossen, on July 11th, 1961, that's quite a while back, made it possible for Lee Harvey Oswald to return with his communist bride to the United States from the Soviet Union. That paved the way for Oswald, according to Frank Capel, he loves to say Oswald killed Kennedy, but it paved the way for Oswald to be the patsy for the murder of President John Kennedy. On behalf of the ambassador, Klossen, the American ambassador to the Soviet Union, who was Walter Stessel at the time, later became the commissioner, high commissioner, ambassador also to Poland. Walter Stessel, my old next-door neighbor on Walden Drive, lived right next door to me when we went through high school and college. He was the ambassador at the Soviet Union. Klossen signed a statement indicating that Oswald was disillusioned with the Soviet Union. He should be permitted to return to our country. Boris Klossen authorized the money to finance the trip for Comrade Oswald and his wife. Now, Henry Kissinger worked with Boris Klossen at the time, and Klossen gave the money. Now, I'm going to read you from the Warren Commission hearings. When Lee is ready to come home, he writes to his mother, "Go to the International Rescue Committee and get the money for our coming home, and they will arrange it. Don't you put up your own money." The International Rescue Committee was formed in 1946 for political purposes for emigres who from the far right for the Cold War, and it was headed by Leo Chern, C-H-E-R-N-E, who is still on Ronald Reagan's President's Intelligence Foreign Advisory Board, and at the time was Boss Reagan. That organization sent the money to Lee and Marina Oswald to come home, and the man who worked with Oswald was Boris Clausen, who was appointed this high job on Kissinger's recommendation to political intelligence officer for the U.S. negotiating team. So Clausen wrote the letter on behalf of Oswald. He was assigned to the United States Embassy in Moscow, and he was the instigator of the money, and Henry Kissinger selected Clausen for the SALT team and had access to the details of the money by which Lee and Marina Oswald came to the United States. Remember that name, and I'll do more on that later, but this is another link of Henry Kissinger rewarding and promoting a person who worked out of the Russian embassy and provided the means for Lee and Marina Oswald to come to the United States, and they had as much information they needed about them if they wanted to hold up the money. Now, in the hearings, in the Warren Commission hearings, there are sections on the white Russian community, and of course I outlined these for years, and I want to describe some of the testimony of Paul Rygotter-Rodsky, a wealthy oil man who is testifying in Volume 9 of the Warren Commission hearings about the social milieu that Marina and Lee entered into after Henry Kissinger's friend arranged the money for them to come home. And some of the questions are silly. The person asking the questions about the white Russian community is Albert Jenner, the attorney at the same time for Henry Crown and General Dynamics. As soon as Kennedy was killed, the F-111, the F-16, and the General Dynamics Corporation became a multinational profiteer of the Vietnam Southeast Asian War. Jenner was the attorney for Henry Crown as well as on the Warren Commission, and so he's the one asking the questions. He said, "Will you be good enough, Mr. Rygotter-Rodsky, to tell me first, in general, if there's a usual pattern of somebody coming here to the United States from Russia? How do they become acquainted in this community of Russian descent? I have in mind the connection of Oswalds, trying to find the Oswalds. What would be the common manner of fashion that the Oswalds became acquainted? What were your interests in people like them?" And Rygotter-Rodsky said, "There are methods of immigration into the communities in Dallas of the Russians I'm talking about. One is friendship, acquaintanceship somewhere in Europe or China or somewhere else. Different Russians, and of course the Order of the Tolstoy Foundation, which was a CIA foundation." Rygotter-Rodsky said the Tolstoy Foundation was started by Miss Tolstoy. She came to the United States, organized the foundation to take care of Russian refugees throughout the world, wherever they may be. They process them, which means they know all about them. They come into here through their own organization or different organizations, and then there's a church organization, and you go to the Tolstoy Foundation, and they place the Russians in this country. This is page 5 of volume 9. I'm on the board of directors of the Tolstoy Foundation, also in foreign countries. Now, anybody who comes to the Tolstoy Foundation, you know right off the bat that they've been checked and rechecked and double-checked, and here's Boss Reagan, and a man from the International Rescue Committee that works with the Tolstoy Foundation, and Lee Oswald is writing for the Soviet Union to his mother to tell her to go there for their money. I'm on the board of directors of Tolstoy, he says. Now, anybody who comes is checked. There's no question about it. I mean, that's the number one stamp. And Jenner says, that's the number one stamp of approval of your genuineness. Of approval, Rygotter-Rodsky said. In fact, the U.S. government recognized that and has been aware of the Tolstoy Foundation. They gave as much as $400,000 a year. That's from the CIA subsidy for this work. And other Russians come here. And so he's telling what a great organization this Tolstoy Foundation is. And Rygotter-Rodsky says, in Houston, we have a group of people that meet them. A small group of Russians, they have the approval of the Tolstoy Foundation, and then he said they come and get into place, and then he said, I would like to go off the record, and before Earl Warren and Gerald Ford and John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles, Rygotter-Rodsky goes off the record for a moment, and then begins to tell about the churches in Houston and Dallas that the aristocracy go through as against the other people, and that Marina Oswald went immediately into the very elite church of the old guard, who fled the Bolsheviks, and she was embraced into the church of the white Russians in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He goes into the difference between St. Seraphim in Dallas, people who escaped the communist regime, and St. Nicholas, the church of the old guard, and the difference between the two churches and how Marina Oswald gets into the most elite group of people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'll take about, what am I, 1 second break? We'll just flip this tape over and continue with the story of the Oswalds.